surely.
I felt Huddy put his arm around me, and I took his hand. I had to. I had to have something human to hold on to. The way Eddie tells it, the Buick's first live birth sounds too close to human. It had a mouth inside all those writhing pink things. It had a chest. It had something that served it for eyes. I'm not saying any of that's wrong, but I can't say it's right either. I'm not sure we ever saw it at all, certainly not the way police officers are trained to look and see. That thing was too strange, too far outside not just our experience but our combined frame of reference. Was it humanoid? A little. At least we perceived it that way. Was it human? Not in the least, don't you believe it. Was it intelligent, aware? There's no way to tell for sure, but yes, I think it probably was, not that it mattered. We were more than horrified by its strangeness. Beyond the horror, or perhaps inside it is what I mean, like a nut inside a shell, there was hate. Part of me wanted to bark and snarl at it just as Mr. Dillon was. It woke an anger in me, an enmity, as well as fright and revulsion. The other things had been dead on arrival. This one wasn't, but we wanted it dead. Oh, boy, did we ever. The second time it shrieked, it seemed to be looking right at us. The hose in its middle lifted like an outstretched arm that's perhaps trying to signal, "Help me! Call this barking monstrosity off!" Mr. Dillon lunged again. The thing in the corner shrieked a third time and drew back. More liquid splattered from its trunk or arm or penis or whatever it was. A couple of drops struck Dee, and his fur began to smoke at once. He gave a series of hurt, yipping cries. Then, instead of backing off, he leaped at it. It moved with eerie, gliding speed. Mr. Dillon snatched his teeth into one fold of its wrinkled, baggy skin, and then it was gone, lurching along the wall on the far side of the Buick, shrieking from that hole in its yellow skin, the hose wagging back and forth. Black goop, like the stuff that had come out of the bat and the fish, was dribbling from where Dee had nicked it. It struck the roll-up door and screeched in pain or frustration or both. And then Mr. Dillon was on it from behind. He leaped up and seized it by the loose folds hanging from what I suppose you'd call its back. The flesh tore with sickening ease. Mr. Dillon dropped to the shed floor with his jaws clenched. More of the thing's skin tore loose and unrolled like loose wallpaper. Black, slime, blood, whatever it was, poured over Dee's upturned face. He howled at the touch of it, but held on to what he had, even shaking his head from side to side to tear more of it loose, shaking his head the way a terrier does when it has hold of a rat. The thing screamed and then made a gibbering sound that was almost words. And yes, the screams and the word-like sounds all seemed to start in the middle of your head, almost to hatch there. The thing beat at the roll-up door with its trunk, as if demanding to be let out, but there was no strength in it. Huddy had drawn his gun. He had a momentarily clear shot at the pink threads and the yellow knob under them. But then the thing whirled around, still wailing out of that black hole, and it fell on top of Mr. Dee. The gray thing, growing from its chest, wrapped itself around Dee's throat, and Dee began to yip and howl with pain. I saw smoke starting to rise up from where the thing had him, and a moment later I could smell burning fur as well as rotting vegetables and seawater. The intruder was sprawled on top of our dog, squealing and thrashing, its legs, if they were legs, thumping against the roll-up door and leaving smudges that looked like nicotine stains. And Mr. Dillon let out howl after long, agonized howl. Huddy leveled his gun. I grabbed his wrist and forced it down. "No, you'll hit D." And then Eddie shoved past me, almost knocking me down. He'd found a pair of rubber gloves on some bags by the door and snapped them on.